Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading today from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 16, entitled King Chitraketu Meets the Supreme Lord. And text 21 is on the board, but since it's a one-sentence purport, and the next two verses follow in the same line, I'll do all three texts. Vachasi Uparate Prapya Ya Eko Manasa Saha Anama Rupash Chin Matraha Yo, I mean, yo. So Vyan Naha Sad Asat Paraha Vachasyuparate Prapya Yaeko Manasa Saha Anama Rupash Chin Matrak Sovyanak Sad Asad Paraha Vachasyuparate Prapya Yaeko Manasa Saha Anama Rupash Chin Matrak Sovyanak Sad Asad Paraha Vachasyuparate Prapya Yaiko Manasasaha Anama Rupash Chin Matrak Sovyanak Sad Asad Paraha Madhaji's face. Vachasi, when the words, uparate, cease, aprapya, not achieving the goal, yaha, He who? Ekaha. One without a second. Manasa. The mind. Saha. With. Anama. No material name. Rupaha. Or material form. Chitmatraha. Totally spiritual. Saha. He. Avyat. May kindly protect. Naha. Us. Sat asat paraha. Who is the cause of all causes. The supreme cause. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The words and mind of the conditioned soul cannot approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for material names and forms are not applicable to the Lord, who is entirely spiritual, beyond the conception of gross and subtle forms. The impersonal Brahman is another of His forms. May He, by His pleasure, protect us. Purport. The impersonal Brahman, which is the effulgence of the Lord, is described in this verse. Text 22. Yasmin idam yatashedam tishtat yupeti jayate mrinmayesh viva mridjatis tasmayate brahmane namaha. As pots are made completely of earth, are situated on earth after being created, and transformed into earth again when broken, this cosmic manifestation is caused by the Supreme Brahman, situated in the Supreme Brahman, and annihilated in the same Supreme Brahman. Therefore, since the Supreme Lord is the cause of Brahman, let us offer Him our respectful obeisances. Purport. The Supreme Lord is the cause of the cosmic manifestation. He maintains it after creation, and after annihilation, the Lord is the reservoir of everything. Text 23. Yanak sprishanti navidor mano buddhindriya sabaha antarvahishcha vitatang vyomavatan natosmyaham. The Supreme Brahman emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and expands like the sky, although untouched by anything material. It exists within and without. Nonetheless, the mind, intelligence, senses, and living force can neither touch Him nor know Him. I offer unto Him my respectful obeisances. And then the final verse, text 24. Dehindriya prana manodiyo mi yadangsha veda vedak pracharanti karmasu naivanyada lauham eva praptam staneshu tadrashtra padeshamiti. As iron has the power to burn when made red hot in the association of fire, so the body, senses, living force, mind, and intelligence, although merely lumps of matter, can function in their activities when infused with the particle of consciousness by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As iron cannot burn unless heated by fire, the bodily senses cannot act unless favored by the Supreme Brahman. Purport. Red-hot iron can burn, but it cannot burn the original fire. Therefore, the consciousness of the small particle of Brahman is fully dependent on the power of the Supreme Brahman. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Matak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. From me, the conditioned soul receives memory, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The power for activities comes from the Supreme Lord. And when the Lord withdraws this power, the conditioned soul no longer has energy with which to act through his various senses. The body includes 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, 5 active senses, and the mind. But actually, these are merely lumps of matter. For example, the brain is nothing but matter. But when electrified by the energy of the Supreme Personality Godhead, the brain can act. Just as iron can burn when made red hot by an influence of fire, the brain can act while we are awake or even while we are dreaming. But when we are fast asleep or unconscious, the brain is inactive. Since the brain is a lump of matter, it does not have independent power with which to act. It can act only when favored by the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Brahman or Parabrahman. This is the way to understand how the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, is present everywhere. Just as the sunshine is present because the sun god in the sun globe, the Supreme Lord is called Hrishikesh. He is the only conductor of the senses. Unless empowered by his energy, our senses cannot act. In other words, he is the only seer, the only worker, the only listener, and the only active principle or supreme controller. Om Agyana Timurandasya Agnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Yigrave Namaha Namang Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasai Buddhalai Shri Mate Praladananda Swami Tavane Namang Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasai Buddhalai Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tavane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nivrishesha Shuni Vadi Paschiyati Adi Shitarne. So these are very nice and instructive verses. It explains to us how the Supreme Lord, how Krishna is all-pervading, how by his energy he creates, maintains, and annihilates everything in existence, and how ultimately we can't do anything except by his will, by his permission, his energy. So when I was reading these verses, it reminded me of the sixth chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is explaining about this also. Krishna says, Sarvabhutastam atmanam sarvabhutani chatmani ikshate yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarshanaha. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. And he goes on further in the next few verses to further clarify. He says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, Arjuna. So, in all these different places, Krishna is trying to explain to us how we're separate from this material body. We're separate from this material world. In this material world, there is no equality. In this material world, there is great disparity between so many various comparisons. You know, there's hot, cold, summer, winter, rich, poor, fat, skinny, so many different material comparisons. And because of these different material designations, we falsely think that these are different living beings, or if they're even alive at all. Like many people don't think that animals are living beings. They think they're a lump of matter that just somehow magically is walking and breathing and eating and sleeping, but it actually has no soul, it has no spiritual existence. Therefore, it's okay to slaughter by the millions every single day. Because they don't have this vision. They don't have this vision that everything in this material world is within Krishna, and Krishna is within everything that's in this material world. It's interesting how in the last text that I read today from the Bhagavatam, text 24, Prabhupada's explaining the purport that nobody has the potency to do anything except by the mercy of Krishna. In fact, even when this whole cosmic, material cosmic manifestation was created, initially it was in a dormant state called the pradhan. And the pradhan is the three modes of material nature. Inactive though, they're dormant. The mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. And they're just lying there side by side, so to speak, as if asleep. And then when Sankarsan glances over this pradhan, as soon as his glance travels over this inactive material energy, immediately it springs to life. And the three modes of material nature begin their competition for dominance. And this is when it becomes known as the Mahat Tattva, or the sum total of the activated material energy. It's very important to realize that without that glance, which is also known as Sudarshan, which is also the name of his chakra. So Sudarshan, Su means first, and Darshan means vision, which also ties in with the last purport that I read today, where Prabhupada is explaining how Krishna is the only seer. Krishna is the only doer. He's the only enjoyer. In other words, he's the only active principle that animates everything that's going on. And so without Krishna seeing first, we would have no capability of seeing. So without Krishna's spiritual energy, spiritual impetus, everything in this material world is simply a dead lump of matter. And this is also very valuable to meditate upon. And we can, it's more than just some hypothetical meditation, though. We can actually gain factual experience of this very thing. Like, for instance, that's why so many sages would spend so much time in meditation. Initially, when you're not quite advanced enough to be meditating upon the Supreme Lord, then you're simply working to try to calm the mind, body, and senses enough so you can concentrate on the Supreme Lord. That's why in previous ages they would engage in Hatha Yoga, which is described in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So by doing the Yam and Niyam, the do's and don'ts, then continuing to the asanas, the sitting postures, and then pranayama, and so forth, through all the eight different angas or limbs of the yoga practice, you can calm the mind and body enough, you can make it still enough, so you can actually experience tangibly the difference between body and spirit. Eventually you'll feel your spirit just permeating through this body, but at the same time very separate from this body. Just like when you're wearing these clothes, you can feel these clothes on your body, but it loses its sense of urgency, it loses its sense of self. So your body actually feels like a very heavy coat that's placed over on top of your spirit, your soul. And by the active energy of your soul, and by the Paramatma, this very heavy material coat called this physical material body is flapping around a little bit. And so then when we have this spiritual vision, this vision that I am not this body is simply a machine that's walking around a little bit and then it's going to fall over and die. Krishna even says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, Hridesha Arjuna Tishyati. You know, that this body is simply a vehicle made of this material energy. And Krishna is the one who's directing it. He's directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated on this machine. And as the director, he's known as the Supersoul. He's guiding all of their activities. And so when one can have a vision that's detached like this, then all of a sudden the whole urgency of this material world is lost. All these things that seem so pressing, that seem so vital and dear and so important to us, it all diminishes in its inflated importance. And we realize that, well, no, actually these things don't really matter all that much, and no, I'm not the controller of these things. I'm not in charge of what's going on. By my energy and will alone, I can't control everything around me. And so you come to a vision to where you see things more as just a play, and simply an interaction of these three modes of material nature, each vying for dominance. You can even experience this practically, even within your own life. Like for instance, if you don't clean your room for like several days, then gradually the mode of ignorance will creep into your consciousness. And then those several days will extend into a week. That week will extend into a month. And the next thing you know, you're completely engulfed by the mode of ignorance. And the only thing you think about every time you have free time is just sleeping, being lazy, spacing out, not wanting to do anything. And so this is the process of the mode of ignorance gaining dominance in your consciousness. And then when the mode of ignorance has conquered your consciousness, then all your activities become ignorant. You become more influenced to hang around a certain type of person. And then by the influence of those other people, you become more encouraged to engage in more activities in the mode of ignorance. But at the same time, you can stop that association. We have free will. We can choose which modes of nature we associate with. It takes tremendous effort and energy, though, to change those modes, to choose to go against the current and try to strive for the mode of goodness. It takes extra effort. We feel like, due to the mode of passion, we feel like, oh, I don't have any time. I'm so busy. You know, I don't have any energy. I'm too tired. I don't have the ability to clean my room right now because, you know what? I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to do this. So we have to fight out of the mode of ignorance, struggle through the mode of passion, and just force ourselves. I'm going to clean my room every day. Sweep and wash with water, like Prabhupada instructed. And it's a really simple thing. How long does it take to actually clean a room? You know, especially in the ashram. It's just a 10 by 12 room. How long does it actually take to take a broom, run that broom over the floor, and then throw a little water on it? Maybe 15 minutes maximum. But yeah, because the influence of these modes of passion and ignorance are so strong, it's almost monolithic in its epic proportions, that our consciousness can't even handle the austerity of taking 15 minutes to sweep and mop, to come to the mode of goodness. But once we habituate ourselves into these habits, into these patterns of the mode of goodness, then actually it becomes very joyful and we become very eager to engage in it. To where the next day we can feel how filthy the room has become from all this terrible dust in Los Angeles. So every single day, if you sweep, even a little 10 by 12 room here in Waseca Avenue, you'll get a pile of dust about this big. Every single day. And yet you feel so good afterwards. You look forward to that cleaning every day. You look forward to taking a bath, cleansing your body. You look forward to getting up early in the morning. You look forward to doing all these things rather than it being some drudgery. Oh, I have to wake up in the morning. I don't want to do that. So it's very important to try to develop this more transcendental vision, to try to see how this body is simply like a remote control, you know, or like a marionette on strings. And these modes of nature are just pulling our strings, making our body dance in all these different ways. And then with this vision, we don't become so attached to all these things that are happening around us. And then this detachment is actually essential in coming to see that actually there's more to it than just my own selfish desires and these pushings of these senses. Then we can actually see that there's actually a soul within this body, and I am that soul. And there's another soul in this body also, a soul that pervades all bodies. The super soul, the Paramatma. And this Paramatma is controlling all these other living entities. So that's what yoga practice brings you to, the Ashtanga yoga system. It allows you to see and have darshan of this Paramatma. And then by engaging in Krishna consciousness, it allows us to go even further. It allows us to actually understand about Krishna. So if we don't have this initial understanding of the difference between this body and this soul, how can we possibly understand the difference between my will and my desire to control and Krishna? That's why many people who don't make this distinction, they oftentimes become impersonalists, where they equate themselves with the Supreme Brahman. And so they think that they're all pervasive and that they're everywhere and that they're God. But they're not. So it's very helpful to understand how Krishna is the supreme controller and the supreme doer. Another way that Prabhupada explained of understanding how we can actually see Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna, he gives the example of like a loved one. If there's someone that's very dear to your heart and you see something connected with them, like for instance, maybe someone's shoe or someone's jacket, anytime you see that object, you think of them, and it brings nice memories. Even though that shoe or that jacket isn't actually that person, but because it's connected to that person, you're conscious of that person. So in that way, that person is actually there. Another example Prabhupada gave is that of a son and a father. By seeing the son, you're seeing the father, because the son is connected with the father, even though the son isn't the father. So in the same way, when we see everything in this material world, it reminds us of Krishna, because it comes from Krishna. It's Krishna's. This whole material world is Krishna's. This material energy is Krishna's energy. All these things belong to Krishna. And all these parts and parcels, all these jivas, are separated energies. They're all sons and daughters of Krishna. So in this way, when we develop this vision, this true vision of the yogis, then we can factually be in contact, be in touch with Krishna at all times. Then we'll always be in Krishna, and Krishna will always be within us. Because everywhere we look, everything we do, everything we touch, see, experience, it always reminds us of Krishna. So at all times we can be Krishna conscious. In this regard, it's always helpful to see the example of other great souls who have actually had this vision. Like, for instance, the other day, I was looking at a lot of pictures of Srila Prabhupada. And I was just reflecting on how this great soul had this vision. You know, 'cause looking at all these different pictures of Prabhupada and just regular, seemingly ordinary activities, giving cookies to little kids, you know, giving interviews, press conferences, talking, walking, sitting, eating. Just such ordinary, seemingly mundane activities. Yet all these activities, you never see Prabhupada without the devotees around him. Prabhupada was constantly associating with devotees. Even though they were his own disciples, still, he constantly kept the association of the Vaishnavas. And everything he did was simply for Krishna's pleasure. Prabhupada had already lived a full life, just from a material vision. He was already married, he already had so many kids, he had a successful business. He had all these different things. He didn't want any of this. All he wanted, all he really desired, was simply to preach Krishna consciousness. So when he came here to the West, he was in New York and Boston. And when he was first starting out, very, very few people were actually interested in what he was trying to share. But yet he still carried on because it was his duty, because it was his service. And he was so attached and he was so much in love with Krishna that he couldn't help but not engage in his service. So even nobody would show up for a lecture. Nobody would show up for a program. And yet he still chanted Hare Krishna, and in his journal he recorded that this program was a success. Why? Why was it a success? Seemingly nobody was there. Why did he call it a success? Because he did his duty. He just engaged in his service very lovingly, trying to please his spiritual master, trying to please Krishna. Because he realized that he's not the doer, he's not the controller. As mentioned in the purport of text 24 today, Prabhupada says that Krishna is the only seer. Krishna is the only doer. It's only by Krishna's doing that we actually experience anything. So even though he had a room completely empty, he saw it as a perfect success, because he was faithfully carrying out the order of his spiritual master. And then when the movement started to pick up steam, generating a lot of interest in the youth of the whole world, and so many millions of books were being distributed, if Prabhupada was a materialistic person, he could have been one of the most wealthy people in the whole world, simply by the royalties of those books alone. But he didn't keep a single penny of it for himself. All of it was invested for Krishna. You know, going towards the construction of new temples, going towards the printing of new books, just investing it, reinvesting it back within this movement, to help push on this mission for his spiritual master and for Krishna. You know, undergoing so many austerities, so many hardships. Because he had this vision. He realized that I'm not the controller, I'm not the doer. This body is merely a puppet for Krishna's pleasure. So let me engage this body in Krishna's service. So in that famous poem, when he arrived on the Jaladuta, he said, "Make me dance, make me dance, make me dance." You know, because as Prabhupada said in his own words, "I'm simply an old man, what can I do?" 70 years old, can you imagine how many of us are actually 70 years old in this room? None of us. And yet how many bodily inconveniences are we experiencing? So now fast forward your life until you're 70 years old and try to imagine the state, the condition of your body at that age. And then imagine at that age going on a 2-month journey on a cargo ship, none less, across the turbulent Atlantic, having 2 heart attacks. It's just inconceivable. So that's why it's always so nice to meditate upon these great souls, to meditate upon Prabhupada's life, his example, and everything that he did for us. Because really, without Prabhupada's mercy, without the mercy of these previous acharyas, the parampara, you know, where would we be? I know myself, I would either be probably in jail, or maybe in the hospital, or maybe even dead. You know, and that's just being honest, that's just being realistic. You know, so Prabhupada has had such an amazing impact, such an amazing effect on every one of us, on so many countless millions of people throughout the world. Where would we be if Prabhupada never gave these spiritual ecstasies of him, the Bhaktivedanta purports? Where would we be if he didn't sacrifice his time, stay up every night translating these books? So the least that we could do to show our appreciation for Prabhupada is to try to read these books, try to really imbibe the message that he's trying to share with us, and to share this message with other people. It's actually our duty to do that. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Jai, Granth Sahib Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.